Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is the FCB Radio Network, home of the best personalities and where real talk lives. Online at FCBRadio.com. FCB.
I pray the Lord my soul today that we won't stay, then we won't stay. All we got is us, no one can take that away. So don't stay, it's gonna be okay. I pray the Lord my soul today that we won't stay, then we won't stay. All we got is us, no one can take that away. So don't stay, it's gonna be okay.
Hey everybody, welcome to another JLTY Plus. I'm your host, Kira Davis, and of course, this is a show where we take hot topics, hot button issues, and we discuss the talking points on those topics, and we draw those talking points all the way out to their logical conclusion. But on the Plus show, I just get to talk. I just get to talk to people that I'm really a fan of, that people that I find to be interesting or that I suspect might be interesting. My next guest has to prove himself to me, but I don't think we're going to be disappointed. I'm really pleased to welcome Frank Fleming to the show. Frank is a novelist. He wrote the novel Super Ego. He's a humor writer. He's written for the Babylon Bee, the New York Post, USA Today. He's a script writer. He is a Carnegie Mellon University graduate, and he also works as an electrical software engineer when he's not writing. And he's actually been a pioneer in the virtual reality video business, and he lives in Austin with his wife and 4 children. I don't know what the rest of you are doing with your lives, but Frank is making you all look pretty dumb, so you better get moving. Welcome to the show, Frank.
Hey, thank you so much for having me.
I'm so pleased. We have sort of connected over Twitter, this is one of the good things about Twitter. You know, Sometimes you find interesting people. We go back and forth. I love when you post pictures of your kids. Did Winston get his top hat or what? What's going on with his top hat?
Winchester.
Everybody, I'm sorry, Winchester. It's the top hat. It looks like a Winston.
I've, I've met my paid subscriber goals on Substack, so I think we can finally afford that top hat, because, you know, those are very expensive, especially when you get custom ones for a baby.
Yes.
So we're going to get that top hat. We'll get those pictures out for everybody.
All right, good. So give everyone your Substack. We'll give you another chance at the end, but give everyone your Substack now. You've got to go see, I'm sorry, not Winston, Winchester. You've got to go see Winchester. You have to know what you're looking at to know why it's really important for him to have this top hat. I'd say it's really a priority. So give them the Substack so they can go subscribe and get Winchester's top hat.
Okay, it's called Frank Talk. It's Frank J. Fleming, you know, .substack.com. Or you can just go to frankjfleming.com and you'll get a link to it.
All right, cool. Well, Frank, you are a man of many disciplines. You have your software and engineering. I did not know about you said you're a groundbreaker in virtual reality video. Can you tell me what that means? Because I'm fascinated by that.
That was my one attempt to sound interesting about my engineering. I used to work for a production company called Emergent Order. They're probably most famous. They did these Keynes Hayek rap battles, explain the economic philosophies. But I worked with them on doing a virtual reality video, which is where you take a video 360 all around you, but also one for each eye. So you make it 3D and then you put it like a virtual reality helmet so you can look around. So it's video, but you can look all around you and it's all in 3D. And we did a documentary on that, on like farming using that.
That's cool. My son and I went to VR LA in 2016, Virtual Reality LA. It's a virtual reality conference, and you get to go. I just signed up. Like, one of the things about being press is sometimes you can just get into places for free if you just apply as press. And so I just hit up the weirdest places. Like, I've got a few requests into some UFO conferences. Like, I just like to see where I can get in for free. So I'm like, well, maybe they'll let me into VRLA and I can just take my kid and we can go for free instead of paying $200 a ticket. So we got admitted as reporters. But it was my first experience with virtual reality. And we did this one demonstration that was skiing. And my son did it. And he was like, oh, this is really cool. You got to try it, Mom. And so I put the gear on. And this guy comes behind me, puts his hand on my back. And he says, I'm going to stand here and I'm going to keep my hand on your back because you're probably going to lose balance. And I'm like, well, you didn't do this for my son. You know, and he's like, yeah, but there's actually a difference in the brains of older people and younger people when it comes to virtual reality because of how much we've grown up with screens. So you're more likely to get disoriented in this experience. And I'm just here to keep you safe. So I'm like, okay, whatever. I put that thing on. I hit that first hill and jumped and I leaned into it. That guy had to catch me. Virtual reality, Frank, I think you'll agree with me, is from the devil.
Well, it's funny. I think someone my age or something would know a bit more about virtual reality because it used to be this 90s fad. And I remember it used to be everywhere back in the 90s. And then it kind of disappeared. Now they're trying to bring it back. To me, it was just fun because when I was working in virtual reality video space, it was very new and it had come out. And it's neat to work on projects where Google isn't going to help you because no one's figured it out yet. So you had to play around with it because where we're doing it took like 14 GoPros on like this one gear and had to take all those videos, stitch them together to make like one seamless image, and then figure out how to show one version of one eye, one version of the other eye for the 3D effect.
That's crazy. You know what? I don't even want to talk about it anymore because it's blowing my mind. Well, no, but I was listening to a podcast last night, and the podcast was from 2020, the early part of 2020. For anybody who wants to know, it's my favorite podcast. How Did This Get Made? It's a movie podcast. I love movie podcasts. And they were talking about, I can't even remember what movie they were talking about right now, but they were talking about, it was Surrogates with Bruce Willis. You may have seen it. It's a B movie. It's a sci-fi movie where
I've seen some of it, I think.
Yeah, it's not very good. Not much of Bruce's stuff is that great these days. He's kind of phoning it in. But it posits a world in which everybody has a virtual reality avatar. And that's kind of how people live. and now, you know, in this world. And everybody goes to work through this avatar, has relationships through this avatar. No one's really out physically in the real world. And the hosts of the show were talking about how crazy that sounded, but in the age of COVID, it didn't seem that crazy because this past year of quarantine, which they were, when they were recording, they were in the heat of the pandemic, maybe made virtual reality more appealing to them. And as I was listening to this podcast last night, I was thinking, these people are mere months away from the announcement of the metaverse.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? Which is what I'm thinking the whole time they're talking. Actually, I could turn the podcast off because it was so creepy to me. Like, because I've seen examples of, like, Walmart's metaverse interaction with Facebook, right? And it's super creepy. And I'm starting to get scared of this metaverse thing. I'm starting to get scared of this next evolution of, like, human interaction.
I think the timing's terrible because I'm a horrible introvert. You know, when this pandemic started, it's like, oh, no, we can't go out anymore. We have to stay home. But I mean, even I'm kind of sick of it now. It's like, I don't want a virtual reality go. I want to actually, you know, go out and meet with people. It just seems like it's like the worst time. It's like we're all sick of this virtual stuff now.
But don't you think that it's purposeful? Like, do you think that that's the future? Do you think we're heading to a surrogates like type universe a la Bruce Willis, where we're because we do so much online right now? I mean, we're online right now having this interview, and you can order your groceries online, and Facebook's going to make it so that you can put on your virtual reality headset and just walk into Walmart and pick stuff off the shelves and have it delivered. Like, are we heading there?
I don't know. It's one of those things people predicted forever, and those to me are the things that never catch on. This is kind of weird to say we're doing video chat right now, but it's like, used to be like, that was the big thing. Everybody's going to do video calls,
right?
But it ends up text. That was the way of communication of the future, which is more like, almost feels like a backward step, writing little messages like you would do through a telegram. And it's just, you know, the problem with virtual reality is, well, it's singular, except, you know, if you have connected, and also it takes 100% of your focus. You know, you can't be looking at your phone and have a helmet on your head at the same time. And people seem to like things like, you know, asynchronous chat things like Slack and stuff, where you can chat and do something else and move. But virtuality takes 100% focus. And that's a lot of focus to ask.
Right. Some people, if you work for CNN, you like to be able to do your Zoom meetings and masturbate. So there are things that, you know, I mean, I get it. People like to multitask. That's a little Jeffrey Toobin joke, everybody. Look him up if you haven't heard of him. I'm getting a little. So you're a Christian, Frank. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law is a pastor, and years ago, I mean, maybe 10 years ago, my father-in-law said the next evolution of the human condition is going to be, what did he call it? Transhuman. What's this term?
Transhumanism.
Transhumanism, where we sort of like upload our psyches and then into, well, what we're calling now the metaverse. And then that is how we interact. And how does that affect our souls? And how does that affect our relationship to God? And if can you live forever in a computer?
I mean, people want that. They want to be able to upload their brains. I'm one of those. I'm very skeptical. Any science involving life forms is extremely complicated. We don't really know how a brain works very well still. Our computers don't work anything like a human brain. And just anything involving life is complicated. It's kind of like if you look in the science, like textbooks, they'll explain like after the Big Bang, like what happens the first few milliseconds. You know, I mean, that's all obvious physics stuff, but there's still no very good theory on why animals yawn. Mm-hmm. It's like, like nutrition stuff, they're always conflicting. You know, these things like should be basic, like what do you eat to be healthy? But anything involving life is really complicated. Anything involving the brain is especially, I would say, more than complicated, complex. And I don't know. If people are going to upload their brains, I don't see it any time in the near future.
That's interesting. That's actually an interesting point. I guess because I'm kind of you know, basic. I don't really understand all the nuances of like AI technology or computer technology. I do understand that when I think about buying new socks, Facebook, you know, pops up an ad for me. And I actually did look up mind reading technology once because I was so creeped out by just like literally thinking about something and it's showing up. And I mean, they are basically developing. It's not technically mind reading technology, but it basically is. And I guess I never thought about like how, to me, that's so complicated. Like to me, that sounds impossible. It almost sounds like a miracle. So I never thought about how much more complicated the human brain actually is, because I'm already looking at something that looks complicated.
Yeah, you use a lot of machine learning and things like that, and then like Facebook can pick up patterns. Maybe there's something you're writing about that picked up a pattern. Like they know people who buy socks usually write about this thing or whatnot beforehand. And there's lots of ways to do that. That's very complicated, but the human brain, though, I mean, it's like it's just, I mean, machine learning just never like is anything even close to how a human addresses a problem. It's just brute force computers hitting things in a very dumb way, like dumber than even like a fly's thought process.
Interesting. Okay, that gives me something to think about. That actually gives me a little bit of peace of mind, Frank. Thank you for I didn't plan on having this discussion, but
Well, thank you. I never usually get asked about machine learning and stuff.
It's not really the most fascinating topic for a lot of people. I don't know how many people are still listening to this.
I love tech topics. I think this is actually the first podcast that's had me on and actually talked about them.
Well, to me, it all goes together, right? Because I'm a storyteller, I'm in politics, and I'm interested in the human condition. And all of those things are converging right now in American history and global history. So I don't think you can like tell one story without the other. For instance, you know, we can easily pivot to this idea of technology being used to influence how we view politics, right? Like how it's used to, you know this because you've worked for the Bee. You know how, you know, the Bee's always getting censored and banned and, you know, red flags and fact-checked. I mean, fact-checking satire. There are people on Facebook who are convinced that they hate their family members and they think it's because of something that they're thinking, but it's all due to this algorithm that's only showing them certain things, only showing them certain utterances from people that shapes how they think about the world. And then that in turn forms their emotional connection to people. Like technology has a huge part in our human interaction and political interaction these days.
Yeah, I think actually a G.K. Chesterton essay kind of put that in focus for me. He was talking about how when you live in a small town, that actually makes you more open-minded because you don't choose who to get to be around or just who's ever in that area. Mm. When you move to a city, you can choose, like, find people exactly who think like you and just hang out with those people, and actually helps you be more closed-minded. And I think, in a way, the internet's been like that because now you have access to everybody and lots of people in the world, and that allows you to get a really narrow focus of group for like self-feedback. And I think it's you know, the irony in a way that having this much information, this many people to interact with, has helped us be even more closed-minded.
That is so interesting. Yeah, I mean, I say it all the time, like we've never had more access to more information at our fingertips in the history of humanity, and we've never been dumber.
Like, yeah, because we have all that, and we can choose exactly what we want to see.
Yeah.
There's something out there that's exactly what we want.
Yeah.
And that's the challenge, is to not end up in these bubbles and close and isolated.
Well, how do you cope with that challenge? I mean, you said at the top that you're an introvert by nature, so you're already inclined to sort of, you know, isolate or at least like avoid too many public situations. And there are a lot of people out there like you, and there are even more now because the pandemic has created more people like that. But like, how do you reconcile that?
Well, I mean, one of the first ones I recommend is have a church. You know, that's where you're going to meet people, lots of different walks of life. And these are going to be your family, and family is good because they're not people you choose to be with or the people around you that you have to, you know, support. And I think organizations like that are always helpful. And then I know it's harder online because, I mean, it's really hard to find like more general type things. I mean, on Twitter, I try to follow a wide range of people. I follow mainly because I find like them funny or interesting. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if I find like people tiresome on politics, I unfollow, but I find people I find are thoughtful, you know, don't agree with me, but at least aren't like just repeating the same things over and over, you know, people who seem to be thinking. And that's, I think it's good to seek those people out, not the people who are just, because so many people now, it's just, you know, they get that, repeat those same talking points over and over. You get people agreeing with you and it's so easy. And it's harder to find people who are really trying to, because I mean, it's hard sometimes push back against, like, you know, you'll have, I know certain things, if I go, I believe on, I'll have lots of, like, you know, usually followers or like me would be pushing back.
And yeah. Hard. Yeah. Well, actually, I know. So this is a conversation that we've been having over on my locals page, which is davisnation.locals.com for anybody who wants to join us over there. We're a small band of merry brothers and sisters, very tiny community, but I like it because we have conversations like this. And maybe this is just a God thing, because this is a conversation that we've been having the last couple of days. Like, there are people who have lost their churches through the pandemic, right? I'm one of those people. The pandemic took the shine off a lot of things, right? And I live in Southern California, which is the land of mega churches. And we have, like, we're infected with a very shallow theology here in Orange County. And it does show even in the most sincere of churches. But there were things I was willing to overlook. And then during the pandemic, I was a bit alarmed at how, how statist my church became. It frightened me. And I left and I realized, like, I suddenly was looking at what my kids were being taught in the youth groups, and I was not comfortable with the shallowness of that. And I left before finding a place to go, which was a mistake.
Oh,
because now I'm a little bit lost out here. And I have a few people in my community who are feeling the same way. In fact, one of my faithful members, Tara, asked the other day, you know, can we start a Bible study or something? Because I just don't know how to go back to church. I don't trust people and I'm scared. And it was like, wow, it just hit me in the heart, 'cause that's exactly where I am. And I told her, but really I was telling myself this is that, you know, there's a reason why the first actions post resurrection were people getting together, people gathering to talk about Jesus, to wonder about Jesus. Fellowship is germane to the gospel. We're literally commanded to fellowship. And if we don't, we lose community. And I'm starting to see right now that community is really one of the cornerstones of the kingdom.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where being an introvert makes me feel almost like trouble as a Christian, because I know a big part of being Christian is being able to talk to others, support others. And it's something that's just like naturally hard with me. But yeah, the community is, I mean, it's all important. You know, a lot of people say, oh, I'll just, you know, read the Bible and worship by myself. But no, you need to meet with others. You need to support others. You need to talk with others and read the Bible with others and, you know, study together. And I don't have great recommendations. Definitely different here in Texas. My church was almost the other way. They had to be almost dragged kicking and screaming to do any virtual church at the beginning. Uh-huh. And, you know, as soon as they could, they got people back inside and they really cared about mass. But it was still even tough here. Lots of debate on what's the right way to do things. But luckily, you know, we mainly stayed together and, you know, but it's, I mean, yeah, that has to be upsetting when it's just like you lose faith and, you know, who's supposed to be, you know, talking to you about these things. And it's, that's tough.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals, so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hello, family. I'm Bruce Hagans.
And I'm Rashima Hagans.
And we are The Hourglass. Our show is an entertaining and informative podcast examining life, love, relationships, and more through a Christian perspective.
So join the family. Subscribe to The Hourglass, an FCB radio podcast on Apple, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You know what it made me hungry for, Frank? It made me hungry for leadership. And that's what I feel like. That's where I feel like we are right now. Like, we're all just looking, we're looking for boundaries. We're looking for leaders who are going to stand up. I mean, I know you're a parent. You know this even in your own home. Like, there are so many parents. You look around, there are so many parents, maybe more in my area than in yours, but so many parents who are just kind of like, well, you know, my kid will tell me how they're feeling. My kid will tell me who they are. My kid will tell me, you know, and my kid will guide their discipline. But really what kids and I think all of us are starving for is someone to stand up and say, no, this is a boundary. This is a line. This is a line you've crossed. You either come back or you get lost, because this is the structure that will work. And I just feel like we're missing that definitive nature in a lot of our discussions. You can put this politics, religion, even in the arts. We're sort of missing these boundaries.
Yeah, it's just it feels very fractured and, you know, like I said, leaderless and just everything going everywhere. And yeah, it feels like what we really need as a country is more something to unite us. I always felt like, you know, what the country needed was a mission statement. You know, like we have like our constitution, whatnot, but just like a simple mission statement, like that we can all say we agree on, like we all work to protect each other's rights or something, you know, but we, so even if we have different approaches, at least there's one thing we all agree on. I always felt like that's something we're lacking right now, because no one really seems to have any point of agreement anymore.
But how can we, when we've obliterated the basis of this, the foundations of this country? Like I just finished my first draft of my first book, which is kind of about this subject, right? About drawing your lines, deciding where you're going to stand, you know, and standing there. And, but one of the things I noted is that, you know, how John Adams told us, look, this constitution is made for a religious people. It's made for a moral people. You know, it cannot govern the irreligious. And yet, and now we're in this era where the irreligious are dictating the conversations and the religious are being painted as problematic and bigots and literally #literally Hitlers. So we can't agree on even one simple mission statement, because we have strayed so far from the one thing that we needed to keep, to hold it all together, which is the gospel.
Yeah. And I've come recently to realize that secular is kind of a scam. There's no such thing. You're either going to have an organized based things on organized religious belief, or you're going to have things based on a disorganized religious belief. And then it's just every week, it's like they decide what's the new important thing that everybody has to believe. We've never really been secular. I mean, the basis of like the American system of rights is that we believe everybody's created by God to be equal. Mm-hmm. And that is a very religious belief. Evolution does not teach everyone was created equal.
Right.
That comes directly from the Christian concept of a soul, where there's this eternal part of us. Like, we may look very different on the outside, you know, men, women, different races, but the soul is where we're all equal, and we're all equal in God's eyes. And that's a very important, you know, unprovable concept. But it's a religious edict, and that's something we all, pretty much everybody in this country, believes in, even if they think they're atheist. And and I think, yeah, it's like there is a very big religious basis to this country, and you can't completely remove that and expect the country to stand.
And it's not standing. This is my thing. I think we have removed it, because what I've seen a little bit in after Trump's election, I saw this a little, I would have said a lot then, but now it's a lot. But I've seen a little bit where it's becoming okay to demonize people who don't think like you or believe like you. And now in the COVID era, there is an entire swath of America that actually feels like someone like you, Frank, for instance, does not have a soul. That you are completely otherized. You are in fact worthy of being punished, because you are not a good person.
Yeah, it's one of the scarier things I see is people not only want to be hateful, they want others to praise them for how hateful they are.
Yeah.
Because they're hating the right people.
Yes.
And it's like, no, this isn't any different from all the worst things you've seen in history. You're not, you know.
No.
The problem with the Nazis wasn't they chose the wrong target.
Right. Right. Yeah, it is. This is what I was saying the other day on my some of you listeners might, if you've listened to the episode I did on Patton Oswalt. Did you see him making his mea culpa for taking a picture with Chappelle?
Yeah, Frank? It was very sad.
It was very sad. I actually did a whole episode on it. I broke down his apology, and I just like talked about some of the things that were right with it, actually, and some of the things that were wrong with it. And one of the things I said was, because he in his quote apology, he posits that perhaps he's been too harsh in cutting off some friends and family lately. And he's thinking about how he wondered if he pushed them further to where he didn't want them to go by being so, you know, forcefully cutting them off and hate and being and choosing to hate what they stand for. And I said, yes, Patton, that is absolutely right. You're right in that respect. You have pushed them. You do cause people to dig their heels in further. And the thing about hate is that everybody thinks that they're going to be the one to wield hate in a way that will help, right? It's the one ring. It's exactly. I just watched Lord of the Rings over New Year's. So, but it's the one ring, right? Where I know that this has ultimate power to destroy everything, but I can use it for good. I can use it to punish the right people. And then the innocent people, I can use this ring of hate to save. And the thing is, hate, you cannot wield hate. Hate will wield you. It doesn't work the other way.
Yeah, it's, you know, I try to stand back from most of politics and not get like too worked up about it. But the cancel culture stuff is some of the things that sometimes make me almost like feel physically sick.
Cause
it just, when you're turning people against their friends and trying to put wedges between them, I mean, it's about as evil as it can get. And everybody just thinks, you know, oh, I'm the one person in the world who has all the right politics and all the right views, and I don't need to discuss with anybody anymore. And it's like, no, I mean, to me, to like say a topic is taboo, we discussed it, you know, we've decided, and you, no one can discuss, say, a different, have any different view. I mean, that, to me, that's like a nuclear weapon. That's like the thing you never want to do. You always want to meet speech with more speech. It's like, I kind of worry. It's like, if we just know to yell at, like, people should be able to coherently explain, like, if someone's racist, they should be able to coherently explain why racism is bad. They shouldn't just, you know, right now I feel like people don't know anything other than just kind of scream at it. And, you know, and if you can't explain your views, they're not going to stand. And that's why it's supposed to be with speech, you meet with more speech. And you should, you know, you should never say, oh, this is it. You're cut off. You can't say that. You know, you'd never want to do that. I mean, that's like the last thing.
That's why I do this show.
Now it's like they'll do it for anything.
That's why I do this show. That is why I started Just Listen to Yourself, because I was screaming at my computer screen going, are you people even listening to what you're saying? You know, you're contradicting yourself. You're contradicting what you believe. Like, you're not really. And I realized one day that the reason why a lot of people are so hateful when they speak to each other about politics is because they don't know how to articulate what they believe. So they need to bash you over the head with it. And if you don't get it, then you're the problem. Instead of being able to say, hey, I can defend every one of my ideas and I can give you a reason, you know, I can give you a reasonable argument for it, which I believe takes a lot of the tension out of conversations. Like, my daughter, she's 14. She's a typical 14-year-old Orange County girl. She gets most of her political opinions from TikTok. And she will often tell me, you know, like, one of her old church leaders one day, she said, oh, I was following one of the girls that I follows is her neighbor or whatever. And she said that our old youth group leader is just totally racist now. And I'm like, well, what does this mean? And she's like, she's just a racist. She said that she's just become a really big racist. And I'm like, well, ask your friend what that's based on. My daughter will say that about multiple people, like, oh, that so-and-so, that person's a racist. And I'll be like, but tell me what the racism is. You know, all she can do is tell me that the person is racist, but she can't tell me why the person is racist. And usually, when she can articulate something, the more we dig into it, we always end up at, well, that's not really racism, is it? That's just somebody who said something you didn't like. That's different.
Yeah. We have these words and labels we use in place of thinking. And it's just, you know, we have to work not to do that. You know, it's, you know, especially as Christians, you know, everybody is God's creature. Everybody's someone of value, and you can't just come up with reasons to write people off. I mean, that's a tough one all the time. There's always people, it feels like it's easier to say, oh, we're better off without, but, you know, you have to work all the time to say, like, you know, you want to know about these people, you want to talk with them, you want to find out what they know. And when we find out reasons just to cut each other off, it's only going to hurt ourselves.
And we're definitely hurting right now, for sure. We need each other more than ever, and we're more divided than ever. Let's shift gears here a little bit. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pause for a break. And when we come back, I want to ask Frank about his writing and the types of stories he likes to tell and why storytelling is important in this day and age. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. All right, I'm back with Frank Fleming, writer, virtual reality pioneer, apparently, and father, humor writer. Frank, what kind of stories do you like to write? What's your favorite genre?
Well, I like writing science fiction and fantasy. That mainly also for the same reason I like writing satire. I would write, you know, satire opinion pieces. It's because I can just make things up and I don't have to do research.
I love it. Okay, I was going to ask you about this then because I love sci-fi. I love to watch sci-fi. Huge fan. When I was a kid, I read sci-fi religiously. I was devastated to find out that L. Ron Hubbard was the founder of Scientology. Like, I only found out because I ordered this book, Dianetics, right? Because I'm like, I love L. Ron Hubbard's stories. This is going to be great. I'm like a teenager. I order this book and it comes in. I'm like, what the hell is this? But I love sci-fi. I've tried my hand at writing sci-fi a few times and cannot do it. How do you make up everything? That is the thing that confuses me the most about writing, because you are starting from scratch. I'm a writer and I do write stories, but everything in my world is like, I know what a telephone is and what it looks like. You know, I know what a pair of glasses are and what they look like. But in sci-fi, you are really challenged to describe a world for people that they do not have a frame of reference for. What are your challenges with that? How do you get over that?
Well, it's different how you approach it. I don't write very hard, what they would call hard sci-fi, where, you know, you try to get the exact science and explain everything. Mm-hmm. When I do science fiction, I do it almost the same as fantasy, where it's just high technology is just sure. magic. You don't need to know how it works.
Okay, yeah, that's fair.
And then, you know, usually just start with a few premises. I mean, everybody has a different way, but I start with a few premises, and then, you know, you get to know your characters, and then you kind of build the story around them. Usually I start with just in my head sort of like a skeleton of how the story's going to go, but then you have to follow the logic of the characters. And sometimes it takes a few twists and turns you didn't initially plan, and you have to adjust for that. So in a way, you know, you get to discover the story yourself as you're writing.
What are some of your favorite sci-fi shows right now? Do you watch sci-fi TV and movies?
Yeah, I mean... I think, you know, of course, Firefly. I remember I was just out of college and working on my own when that was out. And I got to watch a few episodes when it first aired. But back then it was always like, oh, no, my friends want to go out Friday night.
So you were screwed.
Stay home and watch Firefly.
If Firefly had been launched in the streaming era, we'd still be watching it.
Oh, yeah. That's for me. That's about also where my serious level goes up to is like, you know, an episode of Firefly.
Okay.
Super Ego is probably my most serious piece, but most people remark on how funny it is where it's like, no, that's my serious novel.
Hey, I'm being serious. Do you watch The Expanse?
I've watched the first season. It really grabbed me. I read the book it was based on. I thought that was really interesting. It I hadn't seen before science fiction where it's like, we're in space, but we're still contained to just this solar system. And I thought that was a pretty neat premise.
Yeah. I love The Expanse. I'm obsessed with it, actually. And a lot of conservatives love The Expanse. This is interesting. I think it's because it is really a show about freedom and human nature, like finding, like, it doesn't matter. We leave this planet, but we're still humans and we still tribalize. You know, you have the whole solar system in front of you, like the universe is at your feet. And yet we cannot help but tribalize and war and fight. And there are things we don't understand. And so we're battling the unknown while we battle the known at the same time. And it's also like, who gets to make the rules when we move out into new spaces? I think I don't know. Why do you think so many conservatives love this show?
I don't know. Yeah, like I said, I mean, there's usually a lot of it, anything spacefaring. Yeah, there's going to be a freedom element. And that's, you know, that's something that's going to end up there, even if, you know, you had very liberal people or leftists who wanted to go somewhere else. It's kind of like in Star Trek Next Generation, they tried to make the big villains these capitalists, the Frenge, when it first started Frenge. Out. But it just didn't work. There's nothing scary about like individualists and stuff. Right. Instead, they needed the Borg, the collectivists.
Because they were
like,
just super hilarious. Same. Yeah, the Frenge were just more annoying than anything. Yeah, they ended up
they ended up being these joke characters. Yeah. And then, you know, for a real villain, you need a collectivist. You need the Borg. Someone who's like to say, oh, everybody conformed this one way. And, you know, a lot of those themes are just going to, I mean, you can't avoid them, even if you wanted to try to make your own political point.
Well, I love that. Yeah. No, I love that idea about collectivism being sort of naturally evil, naturally sort of conforms to collectivism.
Yeah. And I try not to get too much into politics. And, you know, for me, I like fiction and stuff to be a break from all that. I've probably gotten to it a little bit. I talk a little bit about government and stuff and super ego. I mean, the main premise is he's like a psychopathic intergalactic hitman. and it goes a little bit to things, and he has a few little commentary. And then my novel Hellbender, I do a bit more like straight satire of things in that. But for the most part, it's like more interested in characters. And, you know, for me, writing you write about politics and it's fun here and there. But for me, the fiction is to write about bigger ideas, which is more like, you know, human nature and things like that.
I agree, which is why I think in the political sphere, there is such a delineation between like liberals who make art and conservatives who make art, because I do think that there are. Although it's starting to change now because so much art is message oriented. But I agree with you. Like, there are so many conservatives out there who will say, and libertarians who will say, we need to make, you know, the conservative version of X, Y, or Z. And it's like, no. In fact, it's my belief that if you just leave the messaging out, most things naturally, most stories will skew towards a freedom-oriented mindset or right-of-center mindset. I mean, once you take out the blatant messaging, because human nature, we say this in politics all the time. Liberals are not leading liberal lives. They're leading conservative lives with liberal views, right?
Yeah. They're the pushers. They don't use their own.
They don't use their own supply. They don't get high on their own supply. You know, it's the same thing. Like, most people will skew this way towards like a more family values oriented, or that's what they understand. So conservatives, I feel like, just have the wrong idea about what good art is supposed to be. It's not supposed to be, this is a conservative science fiction book or a Christian science fiction book. This is just a story. And there are a lot of parallels for you to pull out of this story in your own life if you would just leave the politics behind.
Yeah, and this is something I was talking with other conservative creatives, because it is a frustration where it's like, you know, we don't want to write, you know, conservative stories or necessarily Christian stories where it's like, you know, those Christian movies are obviously Christian. We want to write good stories, really good. You know, they'll have our values and things in it, but they're just a story for everybody can enjoy. But, you know, if you go like, hey, I'm a conservative Christian, I made this story, and like, oh, if you go, oh, I made this story, and it totally owns the libs, then, you know, you'll get some interest. And that's sort of the problem.
Yes.
And it's, you know, we want to kind of get out of this ghetto where it's like the special Christian conservative version of things, where we want to just make art.
That's what I want. Yeah. I think it's going to be imperative moving forward, because stories influence people.
Hey, it's Kira Davis here. Are you like me and looking to get in shape for summer? Well, I've got a deal that can help you. You can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. One of my favorite things about Factor Meals is how easy they are. You can get chef-prepared meals on the table in 2 minutes with Factor's ready-to-eat meals. so you can get back to doing what you love this spring. Are you looking for something a little fancier? Say no more. You can try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus. Factor is your solution for fast, premium meals without the need for cooking. And if you're the type that likes to look out for the environment while you're getting in shape for that summer bod, you'll be happy to know that Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. And fans of Just Listen to Yourself get a very special deal on Factor this month. Head to factormeals.com/JLTY50 and use code JLTY50 to get 50% off your first month. Plus, get this, plus 20% off your next month. I got to tell you guys that again because I know you can't believe it. Use code JLTY50 at factormeals.com/JLTY50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
This is Darvio Kingpin Morrow, CEO of the FCB Radio Network and producer of this show, Just Listen to Yourself with Kira Davis. To the subscribers of this incredible show, first of all, thank you. Second, I want you to add another show to your podcast rotation, my show. The Outlaws Radio Show. We are an entertaining and informative show that talks about everything from pop culture to politics. Nothing's off limits. My co-host Robin O'Malley brings you the latest news and gossip in the entertainment world on our segment, Tea Time with Ro. My other co-host, Dante Bry, rants on political issues in our segment, Dante's Hot Takes. And also, we bring you some of the best interviews with people in the worlds of politics, entertainment, culture, and more. We're a lighthearted show that doesn't judge you for the way you vote, and we don't spend our time shoving media narratives down people's throats. If that sounds like the show for you, subscribe to the Outlaws Radio Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeartRadio, or wherever you get your podcasts. That's OUTLAWS, the Outlaws Radio Show.
You know, you talk about stories all the time on Twitter, like what is moving you, you know, and what is... or like I made that post the other day about watching Lord of the Rings over New Year's and being like absolutely wrecked at the end of it. And I've seen it a billion times and I'm wrecked every time. I know what's coming. I can say every line from the movie. I know every note of the soundtrack. But it moves me because it is a compelling story. And even like if you want to make it biblical, like, whether or not you're a Christian, the story of Jesus Christ is absolutely compelling. It's so compelling that it has reshaped the entire world in the last 2,000 years. A good story is compelling to change people. And I wish kind of in politics, we would tell more good stories instead of spewing hate.
Yeah. And I have no idea of Peter Jackson's politics, but
right.
I mean, that's the kind of art conservatives like to make. I mean, that's all great values in Lord of the Rings, but it's not like a political cudgel, or it's like you're trying to, because that's what I always like annoying, especially conservatives, because when politics gets injected into our, it tends to of course lean against us, and it's just like you're trying to enjoy something and they're just jamming you in the eye every so often with their politics, and it's like we want to avoid doing that the other way. We want to just talk to, you know, not these temporary political issues we get into, but what are the underlying values?
Yeah.
And that's what you have to make art about. I mean, you know, people say read another book, but Harry Potter is a great example where it's straight, you know, values that are like universal that need to be preached but put into an art form that everyone enjoys. And that's what conservatives need to aim for. It's still hard, but I feel like it's turning. I feel like we have more people maybe entering the fray, and then we'll, hopefully something will break out.
I agree. There's a lot of work going on over the Daily Wire. Of course, the Babylon Bee has been a big part of that. So the listeners will hate me if I let you go without talking about the Babylon Bee, your experience there. I did talk to Frank offline, well, online, but off the show, you guys, a little bit about this. I promise I wasn't going to put him too much on the spot, but there has been a huge shakeup at the Bee. And it has really shifted some things. So the former creative director, Ethan Nicole's actually gone over to the Daily Wire. He's taken his head writer, Adam, with him. And it's really shaken things up. What can you tell us about what you know about what happened at the Bee?
Well, I was listed as their senior writer. That's because I wrote pretty regularly. I usually wrote one article a day for them. But I've always worked part-time. To me, it was always, they paid me, but it wasn't about the money. It was about having fun. And when this whole thing kind of blew up, it just wasn't fun anymore. Part of it is I'm good friends with Ethan, plan to continue to work with him. And part of it is also the headline stuff is, it's a bit of a grind. Like, I enjoy writing those articles. I've always tried to put a lot of personality and humor in every article I wrote. And that was fun. But coming up with the headlines, like a good enough headline for like the next day, that was a bit of a grind. And it's not the writing ultimately. I'd rather be brainstorming on story ideas and bigger things. And so I decided it's time to move on. And that's why I'm focusing now just on my novels. And then I got my Substack where I can write like different humor pieces like I want to write, and short stories and maybe a few little commentary things. And so I'm going to try and explore what I can do there, because I've had some fun before writing pieces for it. And now I got a bit more time to write for it more regularly.
It feels like after what happened, and Ethan has been out there, but if you're curious, he has been out there talking about what went down in detail. You can go to his Audio Mullet podcast, and he gave like a whole explainer on it as well. I've had some private conversations with him, but I'm not going to talk about that. You can just hear directly from Ethan's mouth. But I wonder, Frank, where you... the creative heart of the Bee was Ethan and the team that he had gathered, and half of them are gone now. So it makes me wonder what the direction of the Bee is going to be from here on out.
Well, it considers what you liked about the Bee. I think to like a lot of the scribers and the people who are really kind of into the Bee and following all this in the podcasts, I mean, that's a huge devastating change. I think Ethan was a lot of the heart there, and he's someone, you know, creatively, you know, when I talk about like, you know, who's always wanted to like to really expand out and get out of things just, you know, that's like labeled conservative and such. But I mean, if you really just enjoy the Bee for like, you know, the headlines and funny articles, I don't think that's probably going to change very much. I did a lot of them, but there's still a lot of funny writers there, working on those. So I don't think that part's going to change very much. I wonder though, how much more they'll do now with, cause they were really expanding video and cartoons and things.
Yes.
And I worked a little bit helping on those, but, that was mainly, Ethan and Eric, who just kind of came out of the closet. Cause he was someone who did a lot of work, who was doing regular Hollywood work and didn't want to get blocked out of it, but now he's come public. They did a lot of that, so I don't know if that's going to continue.
Yeah, that would be my concern. I was really impressed with the operation that they have been able to expand. I mean, I was first on the Bee like 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, when they were just like renting an office somewhere. And then, you know, my last appearance on the Bee, they've got like a whole studio and like a whole setup. And I mean, they really were taking it places that I was really excited about. So we'll see how that goes. I wish the best of luck to everybody who's still there. I mean, Kyle's awesome. And, you know, they still have like good people on the team. And I hope that if you enjoy the Bee, that you will continue to enjoy what they have to offer. There's no doubt that the Babylon Bee has been a changing cultural force in the political satire space, and a much needed bit of levity. But while you were still with the Bee, you got to interview Elon Musk. What was that like? Is he crazy?
Well, that was so bizarre because, you know, there's in Austin where I live. And so it's like, oh, well, I found out from Ethan, oh, we're coming down. It's like, oh, okay. Well, like, I was actually supposed to go to my mother-in-law's that weekend. Uh-huh. I got out on that.
Nice.
And I tried to help with like come interview questions. I think I was kind of useless, though. But I was standing there in the background, like actually hear me talk near the beginning. They mentioned me. And it was pretty cool. I mean, just because, hey, that's Elon Musk. He just kind of walks, you just start walking in and asking questions. And they just, luckily they were rolling because they didn't like have a formal start to the interview. But it was interesting because he's almost like an interview with somebody who didn't know what the Babylon Bee was. Uh-huh. They ask these stupid questions.
Yeah.
And he just give these long, serious answers to each one. But he, of course, he obviously knew what the Babylon Bee was because he's like citing like headlines the whole time he's there. But it was very interesting.
But
that was quite an experience.
But he's a pro. He's answering the questions he wants to, you know, to be asked of him, right? Like this is what Donald Trump does this too, and very well. Not to make that comparison, but he does it very well too. He'll be asked a question, but it's like, but I have more to say on this, so I'm not going to stay within your parameters. Like those guys are big thinkers, right? Elon Musk is a big thinker. A little question to you is like, for him, it's like, this has wider applications, and I'm going to, you know, he's an outside the box thinker. And I guess as strange as he can be, I think most geniuses are strange. We would agree. He is fascinating. He's fascinating.
Yeah, he's really shaped things. I feel like in a good way. I mean, I got tired of any time I'm telling, because I love space. I love learning about space and stuff. Talking to my kids and telling them about like cool space things, and then every conversation would end with, if you want to know more, go ask your grandmother about it, because it's like felt like, you know, all the moon landings, everything was before I was born.
Yeah.
So. Now we finally got some cool things. I mean, when you see like those rockets landing back side by side on the ground, it's like it looks like CGI. It's like something finally from 2020 that as a kid I thought things would be in 2020.
Right. Like, yeah, we totally flying cars, and yeah, it feels like we're there. And there are a lot of people who criticize Elon Musk for it's just the usual suspects, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. He gets criticized because he's spending all this money on space exploration. Like when the Dragon X successfully left orbit and docked with the space station, and that was like a huge historic deal. And there were a lot of people like, Elon Musk just spent $50 billion to go, you know, orbit above the Earth, and we have people starving on Earth. And so there are a lot of people who criticize a guy like that sinking money. Even Bernie Sanders has done this, right? Sinking money into exploration and projects that feel like they're out of a sci-fi movie when so many people on Earth are suffering. What do you say to that, Frank?
I always find it the dumbest thing. They're trying to say, like, if you spent $6 billion, you could end world hunger.
Yeah.
It's like, why are you talking to him then? Talk to the Democrats or, like, make it a $1 trillion bill. I mean, they could slip in end world hunger and no one would even notice. Because it's like, I mean, it's so silly to talk about billionaires. I mean, Elon Musk has, like, you know, his current net worth is, like, 200-something billion dollars, which, I mean, even if you pretend it's all cash, which it isn't, it's like this tiny, tiny thing compared to the federal budget each year. It's like that, you know, don't worry about the billionaires, worry about the trillionaires, you know,
right.
The federal government, all its spending. I mean, all the wealth of all the billionaires, I think if added together would only be like maybe 8 months of government spending.
Yeah. Yeah. If we just confiscated it all. Yeah, right now,
you get one like 8 month period with no one having to pay taxes, so that's it.
Yeah, I mean, it is. Didn't he kind of say that too? I think Elizabeth Warren was criticizing him, and he was like, "Well, just give me a price tag. Like, what's the price?" Yeah.
He said, "Like, oh, I'm going to be paying like $11 billion in taxes this year. Don't spend it all at once. Oh wait, you already did."
But you know, it's a good point. It's like, well, what is the amount of money that I could give to you to solve world hunger? Right, just name it. you know, and but of course it's not about that. I always find it also so narrow-minded, and I find it to be the difference between people who seek freedom and people who seek bondage, right? People who seek bondage will always have their eyes focused on the ground level where their chains are.
I was sort of revealing, you know, that one time, I forgot who it was, but she's like talked about the amount of money Bloomberg was spending and how like
Mara Gay
said he could have given $1 million to everybody in the U.S. And what's revealing about that is like most people should know, well, that's nonsense.
Right.
But some people think like the billionaires are sitting on enough money that they could all just hand us checks and no one in the country would ever have to work again, which is just stupid nonsense.
It's childish.
Yeah. It's you got to understand what wealth is, and it's not, you know, just money. It's to me, I don't want to call it an interesting read. It was one of the driest, dullest reads I ever had, but was Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations.
Uh-huh.
It's mainly like corn prices from hundreds of years ago and stuff. But hidden in that was some of just like the most insightful, like, oh, this is how wealth works and stuff. And so I feel like it's one of those important things, like maybe everybody should read the Cliff Notes of it, not the book.
Interesting.
Because it's like you understand it's like, you know, shiny gold or for us paper dollars isn't wealth. It's, you know, it's what we're able to produce and such. And it's like, you know, people are saying like, why wouldn't you just like for the pandemic pay everybody to stay home? It's like, well, we can't eat money.
Right. This one guy was on Twitter the other day and he was like, it just blows my, he's a comedian, of course. He was like, it just blows my mind that we could have been over this pandemic if 3 weeks, if right from the start, everyone had just stayed their asses home and we paid them to stay home for 3 weeks or at any point during this pandemic, we could be over this. I'm like, who thinks like this? What are you going to eat? Who's going to pick up your trash? Like, who's going to keep the electricity on? Like, what is this?
I riffed on that. It was like, we just pay everybody to stay home. And you think, well, how are people going to eat if they're like, hope they're good? Well, that's the genius. We give them edible money.
Oh. I don't know why we didn't think about this, but I think this is something that the Democrats could run on in 2024. Edible money. We might as well just eat it. At this point.
Yeah, well, yeah, with the inflation, it's going to get more and more worthless. You might as well just put it between two buns and eat it.
My dollar is almost worthless here in California. I can't even tell you the tragic state of everything here. But yeah, it's like I went to the store the other day because I was like, I just need a few things for dinner. I mean, just that little like a few things run cost me $75.
Oh, wow.
You know, I'm talking like milk, bread, like a package of meat. And I mean, it's like I didn't come away with a grocery bag full of food for four people. Not.
Yeah. Then, I got four kids. It's something I'm definitely feeling. Luckily, one of them was like her absolute favorite food is beans and rice. So
nice. Nice. Frank, I want to thank you for spending this time with us today. I had a really good time talking to you. Before we go, tell everybody where they can find more from you and how they can contribute to Little Winchester's Top Hat Fund. By the way, you must go to Frank, give them your Twitter handle too, so that people can go to your Twitter feed and see pictures of Winchester so that they understand how badly this child needs a top hat.
Well, I mean, easiest thing is go frankfleming.com because I also got the URLs for when people misspell my last name.
Great.
Those putting two M's in
it's not two M's.
Yeah. FrankJFleming.com. I got links to my Substack and my Twitter. I have a terrible Twitter handle. It's IMAO_.
Sure.
Because my blog was IMAO. I don't really write on it anymore, but I've had the Twitter handle so long, so many followers. I didn't want to change it. Substack is Frank Talk. Like so the other things, I'll have links for it and check it out. I have working on lots of little fun stuff on there and hoping to build up an audience for that. And so far I've gotten enough subscribers now. We should be able to afford that top hat. I'm hoping to have a post with pictures next week.
Oh, good.
Winchester in his top hat.
All right. So next he'll need a little waistcoat.
I think we're going to go for a monocle next. I talked to my accountant, my wife, and I think we need a little bit more than it. Double the amount of paid subscribers I have now to be able to afford a monocle, though.
Okay, boy. Bill Winchester's going to have a lot of therapy as he gets older, but I'm sure he's enjoying himself right now. It's been great to talk to you. Thank you so much for stopping by and chatting about this wide variety of things. I told you it would be fun. I wasn't gonna.
Yeah. And thank you so much. Like I said, I never get to talk tech usually on podcasts. Usually, oh, they just want to know about funny writing. It's like, we got to have this long, serious conversation with no humor whatsoever.
Oh, if only they had known. I know, it's so fascinating. No, I have a wider range of interests, which people who listen to this show, they will know. Like, I'm always talking about all kinds of things because I'm just I'm a Renaissance woman, I guess. I have. And in the end, it all connects to me. It's all creation in a way. So, all right, Frank, well, I'll let you go. Thank you so much. And I will be sure to let you know when this podcast is up. And to everybody who listened in today, thank you so much. And as you go out and about your business this week, don't forget, every once in a while, just take a moment to stop and just listen to yourself.
I pray the Lord my soul today that we won't lose faith and we won't lose faith. All we got is us, no one can take that away.
Yeah.
So don't lose faith, it's gonna be okay. I pray the Lord my soul today that we won't lose faith and we won't lose faith. All we got is us, no one can take that away.
Yeah.
So don't lose faith, it's gonna be okay.
The FCB Radio Network. First class broadcasting worldwide.